Imagine you're in another country. You don't know the language. Someone speaks to you, but you have no idea what they're trying to tell you. And imagine you can't even guess at the words by reading gestures or facial expressions or looking at pictures because you can't see. This is the reality for many immigrants who move to the U.S. who are blind or visually impaired. One option is to rely on a translator.
It's nice to meet you.
But if they want to become independent and learn English, they will need language instruction that doesn't rely on visuals. And for that, they could turn to this woman.
Maria, where is Wendy?
The house.
Under.
Under house.
Under the house.
Under the house.
Yeah. Okay,
Allison Imbroso is the statewide ESL coordinator for SAVI, or Southern Arizona Association for the Visually Impaired. And she created a curriculum that teaches people who are blind or visually impaired English. She's an English teacher by training, but teaching without sight turned out to be an entirely different endeavor. I went to her office recently to talk to her more about what she does and why it made her think about language in an entirely new way.
So I would say it's about 75 to 80% visual input. English teachers are very gestural, you know, they have the characteristics on their face. You can see them smile. I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm angry. And they rely heavily on visual images. So I'm going to teach you about a girl. I'll show you a picture of a girl on a flashcard. This is a girl. She, you know, she likes to. And then if you think about the whole worksheet aspect of learning a language, right? So you have a lesson, you know, you might use some flashcards or be drawing pictures on the board, and that's often followed up by a worksheet or working in a textbook. So all of these things are inaccessible to a blind or visually impaired language learner.
So when you got this job and had to develop this curriculum for somebody who can't see or read in that way, that changes it entirely, huh?
Absolutely. So it was a real learning curve for me. You know, one of the best things I learned was keep things concrete and keep them real. So, you know, I was coming in and thinking, well, like models of dollhouses and, you know, could we use things like that? And they kind of went, it's not the best. The best would be to show them real and have them experience and touch and feel real objects. So that really became the backbone of how I was going to approach this. And it really became integral for us to immerse our students in real environments and real situations.
So give me an example of that. What does that look like?
Okay, so the simplest example would be food. So you have an actual apple, or an orange is even more dynamic, where you hold the orange, you feel the orange. You could apply language to that. What does it feel like? Or what does it smell like? And then you peel it. What's that? That's a peel. You are peeling the orange and have them repeat that back to you. What does it taste like? You know, it tastes sweet. It tastes sour. Who knows? Juicy. So this is an orange.
And what kind of students are you getting here? This is, I understand, a lot of refugees.
We do have quite a few refugees in the program. We also have a fairly large Hispanic population. So we have had students from Iran, Liberia, Senegal, Congo, Burma. We've had Karenni refugees, Eritrea. So there's no one size fits all. And that's one of the challenges of this is people who are coming in to this program have a huge variation of language level, education, where they're at with their immigration impacts how we approach their language, and where they're at with their adjustment to blindness.
So what would life look like for one of these people who came in maybe as a refugee if this program wasn't here? Would they be put into an ESL program that was for people who can see? And what would that be like?
So I can give you an example. One of the students that I've worked with, he is a Karenni refugee. He grew up in a refugee camp in Thailand, so just had no access to education whatsoever, being a blind or visually impaired individual. So when he came here, he was 17. So he was put into just a mainstream public school and spent 2 years, 2 to 3 years in an ESL classroom. but didn't learn anything. And in fact, the experience really shut him down. When I got to him, he was about 20, 21, and remember, completely illiterate, so has no concept of language in the form of the written word, you know, A, B, C's, all of that stuff. But what was remarkable about him is he speaks like seven languages and dialects because he has such a capacity and is so adept at like picking up oral information that he was able to pick up all these different dialects. He picked up English when we started working with him, when I started working with him using this method. The trajectory of how quickly he picked up oral language was remarkable. Like, he went from not saying a word, and he'd sit in here with his hood up over his head, and he just didn't want to speak at all, to 1 year later, just we couldn't shut him up. Like, he was talking to everybody, he was out there, he was. But unfortunately, we're seeing more of this, these younger people coming in that are being put into mainstream classrooms and, you know, public schools, and they're already spread thin. And then you have a student who comes in that straddles all these areas of need, right? They're blind, they need to build those skills. They're non-English speaking, they need to build those skills, and they're refugees. Like, there's so many elements that have to be addressed in that situation.
So what I think is so fascinating about this is that you had to completely change not only how you teach language, but what you think about as language, it sounds like.
Absolutely. So for me, when I was really trying to deconstruct how we apply meaning to language, like, how do we know a car is a car? Is it just because we see it? Or are there other elements to that? And can we rely on those other elements? Or are we going to be missing a huge aspect of what a car is by not seeing it? So what I really tried to do when I was developing this curriculum and this methodology was to ensure that we didn't have a void because we weren't addressing the visual. So it's how can we fill that hole with so many other dynamic concepts of what a car is so they're not missing that visual understanding, you know? So I have a little toy car here, and we can feel that and understand that's a car, but we're also going to go out and listen to a car. And there's so much more to the understanding and the meaning of what a car is to just our visual understanding of it.
So when you see clients like the ones you've had, like that 17-year-old from Thailand, and you've worked with them and get them to a point where they're proficient, how have you seen it change people's lives?
So the individual from Thailand, you know, as I said, he had no education. And I remember specifically doing a lesson with him about space and introducing planets and like astronauts. And his world, his mind, I could just see like it blew up, you know, where, oh, this can't be true. This can't be real. I mean, so many of these people come with the cultural stigmas that are attached to blindness from their own countries. Blind people don't do things. They aren't able to do things. They sit in chairs at home, or they go and beg in the streets. So do they have access to education? Not really. Do they have opportunities for their future? Not so much. You know, maybe they're taught a handicraft or taught to play music or massage, I think, are the sort of three things that blind people around the world in underdeveloped countries are doing. And you hear that rhetoric very often in the beginning, like, what can I really do? I'm blind. What can I do? What can I do? I'm blind. You know, our philosophy is so geared towards you can actually do anything you want to do. So we're going to help you get to that point. And when we see them kind of click in to that realization of, gosh, I really do have opportunities available to me here, that's the part I find that is remarkable, and it's so special to be a part of. And the language is such an integral part of them realizing that they can contribute to the community, they can be active members of the society, they can make a life here that is actually so much more fulfilled and satisfying than where they came from. And that's, you know, that's why I do it.
Allison Imbroso, thanks so much for the time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Allison Imbroso is with the Southern Arizona Association for the Visually Impaired. She developed an ESL curriculum for immigrants who are blind or visually impaired.